Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. Chris, good morning to you, sir, or good afternoon, where you are, for sure.
Good snowy afternoon to you, sir.
And a winter wonderland you are in. How much snow do you got on the ground?
Well, this came out of nowhere, and then when they said 3 to 6, you didn't think much of it, but I was skeptical because it came out of nowhere. The latest was 4 to 8. I did the first round of shoveling. We're already, I think we're at a half a foot. So I think when all said and done, we're going to get around 10 in my neck of the woods, Long Island.
My buddy's up in Reno right now, and he's working up at the Tesla plant that they're building up there. The West Coast is getting pounded just the same, sir. They told him he's got a trailer right outside of Reno, close to the job site, as a lot of traveling electricians will do, is they'll take their trailer and get a spot. And he's kind of close to the marina, which carries all the runoff from the mountains. And they told him it'd be a good idea this morning if he were to go ahead and move his trailer out of the floodplain, and the little marina and town there are giving out free sandbags. So I guess a couple inches on the ground, 6-10 inches on the ground, might be better than a flood coming and washing your trailer down the river.
I would say so.
So we're sitting here in Las Vegas. It's about 45 degrees with no rain, going to 50. Not too shabby. Not too shabby for us. But I
so
guess.
What was your thoughts on the World Junior Championship? Games and especially the final against Canada.
I thought it was a pretty exciting tournament, top to bottom. I got to watch parts of a bunch of different games. I watched Canada win their semi to get into the final, and I watched most of the USA Russia. Obviously, Troy Terry becomes the wonder kid of the 2016-17 World Juniors with his overtime shootout performances. I did think it was a shame that kind of hockey that was just fantastic in the gold medal game did go to the shootout. I'd really like them to let them play, if you will, hashtag let them play, and let the game be decided by the kids and not, the luck of the draw. Really, it looked like on Canada's last shot, even the puck kind of rolled off the guy's stick, and then he didn't even really get a good shot on Parsons there. I'd like to see, maybe if you do the 5-on-5 20-minute and they don't decide it, maybe go 10 minutes 3-on-3. I'm sure 3-on-3 would get the job done. I know that's still a little gimmicky, but at least they're playing hockey and not a I saw one guy tweet that it was akin to having a field goal contest to decide the Super Bowl. With a championship on the line, I'd just like to see him play hockey. That's my only critique of it. But really, really good tournament. A lot of high-end skill on both sides in the gold medal game. What stood out to you through the tournament?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Thomas Chabot, who's an Ottawa draft pick. He'll be in the NHL very soon. He was tremendous. I was kind of proud, not just from a Team USA standpoint, but three of the players on Team USA are not only from Long Island, but from Nassau County, Long Island, where I grew up and reside in. It would be Charlie McAvoy, Jeremy Bracco, and Adam Fox, who really had a good tournament. You know, I thought he was going to be kind of a support player for them. He had a really good tournament. I think he might have had two assists in the last game. So I was very happy to see that. I thought Mr. Barzal definitely stood out throughout the tournament as well, and being a top Islander prospect as well as Kiefer Bellows. He didn't have the greatest of tournaments, but he really had a strong final game.
Right.
But the teams were very close, and like you said, it was end-to-end action. And, you know, I would be more than happy if these were the kind of players that we had in the Olympics, these kind of the kids, if you will. I know some countries, such as Russia, would send more pros, if you will, guys they have in the KHL. But, you know, I'm fine with that. But I thought it was an outstanding tournament, and shows, as we've been talking about for some time now on the show, of how much young talent that really stood out in this tournament.
Well, I think when Canada got on the power play and they had Strom, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Matthew Barthol, that was almost unstoppable. And I guess rightfully so, with having, you know, NHL experience on that. But it was a beautiful thing to watch when they got on their power play. They were really well coached, and their skill really came to the top when they got on their special teams play. I want to give a shout out. You mentioned him a little bit. It seemed like every time that the Team USA needed a critical stop or a spark, that your boy from Nassau there, Charlie McAvoy, really, really stepped up and I think elevated himself quite well throughout the whole tournament. It just seemed that number 25 was on the puck, around the puck, getting it out, digging it out, able to take the hit and make the play to get the puck out of the zone. And I think he's got a super bright future ahead of him in the National Hockey League.
He's hard to miss too at his size, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's a well-built young man, and I think that he's going to, you know, really. There's times when just being able to lead the breakout himself or make that quick first pass to get it out of the zone. He showed me flashes of a lot of things that Drew Doughty can do with the puck, as far as bringing it up the ice with skill and speed and getting it out of trouble when necessary in his own end as well. So I was really impressed with his play.
And you were going to mention, and Colin White and Jordan Greenway.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Big bodies, Greenway with Minnesota, Colin White, another Ottawa Senator guy. So Ottawa, I think, in the not-too-distant future, you know, definitely sometime next year, you're going to see Chabot and Colin White being added to that team.
And then how many kids in Team USA? Boston College, huh? How many kids in Team USA come from Boston College?
Most of college, BU, right? I know. Yeah. BU kid, McAvoy. And you know who I think really helped his stock for the draft was the Swiss kid, Tischer Nico. And I think he had a real big tournament. And, you know, a lot of people now are saying that he could be pushing for that number one spot. Our own. A good friend of the show, Zach Devine, talked to him early in the week, and he has him on his currently number two on his mock draft board, and maybe he got to be pushing Patrick Nolan, who's, you know, been dealing with a lot of injuries this year. So I thought he had a really, even though he wasn't in the gold medal game, but I thought he really stood out in this tournament as well and did himself very well in terms of the draft.
All right, well, let's kind of move on a little bit. We did have another worthy topic here to break the ice with as we go into our show today. The Columbus Blue Jackets 16-game winning streak comes to an end in Washington in an ignominious fashion with a 5-0 defeat at the hand of the Capitals. We did have our Columbus Blue Jackets guest on a little bit earlier this season, and he didn't seem surprised that they were, I think at the time we talked to him, they were 9 or 10 in a row getting ready to play Minnesota, and they won that game and reeled off 4 or 5 more in a row before going down one game short of the record. That's the kind of run that Florida went on last year a little bit. I think Florida got 12 or 13 in a row before they lost, and that propelled them into the playoffs. And this, when they came up 1 point shy they actually went into first place in their division for one night. What does this say to you about Columbus and their chance going forward into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much, unless they hit beyond a major deep, they're pretty much a lock. I mean, the top four teams in the Metro, all in the mid-50s to high-50s where Columbus is at, Pittsburgh, Washington, the Rangers, and Columbus. You know, any one of those four teams can win the division, and the one that finishes fourth is going to have the number one wild card. The thing is with the playoff format, especially if you just miss winning the division. I mean, imagine, right now, if you're the Rangers and you're having this terrific season so far, what is your reward for it? Oh, you're going to get the Penguins in the first round, and vice versa.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. So, Columbus is playing with, they're playing better defensively. They're playing with a lot of speed. They're playing they're still playing that in-your-face hockey a bit. Their power play is lethal. Bobrovsky is healthy. He has been consistent. And those are the two bugaboos about him. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see. It will be interesting to see because I know Tortorella has already raised the red flag, now that the streak has ended. Make sure that they don't go into, things will just come to them kind of thing. So it'll be interesting. The Rangers are in Columbus tonight. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond. And I think they'll respond big, well, at least from a mental standpoint, of losing that game, 5-0 to Washington. They want to, not make a statement, but come out and start a new streak. But real quick, did you see any of the outdoor games? Just want to touch base on that because, next week we're having Jillian Fisher on, and she was at the Winter Classic. So I was just curious, did you get to see any of the outdoor games and your thoughts on that?
I had a chance. I watched the Toronto alumni game, and then I watched the second outdoor game. Yeah, I went away. It was 1-1, and my parents were in town for the New Year, doing the whole champagne caviar thing, and hanging out with my mom and dad. And we went out for breakfast, and then it was 1-1, and we come back, and it was 3-1. So I kind of missed most of the action in the game. The outdoor games maybe losing a little luster. Maybe overkill a little bit with the Heritage Classics that they do later in the season when it was, when they brought it out and it was one game right on New Year's Day. I really enjoyed that. But with it's like with anything, if you get too much of it, then you always have that, well, I can go do this and I'll just catch the one tomorrow, or, the Centennial game. I think I saw part of the Toronto game. Weren't they up 5-4 and then they gave it up and lost in overtime? Or won in overtime?
They were up 4-1 and I shut it off at that point with like 8 minutes to go, and then they won in overtime and they paid for it the next day. But yeah, obviously I don't mind them doing, 2, 3, 4 of these games of the year. As long as there's still one more to go this year. They're playing at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. with the Flyers and the Penguins. So as long as they can move these games around, you know, I don't know. I don't think Toronto's had an outdoor game. I know St. Louis didn't. So, I mean, I know you've seen similar teams in these games because obviously these games are usually on NBC and they want the, you know, the big teams with the big stars. But obviously for marketing purposes, growing the sport, you know, generating revenues for the sport, all that good stuff, you know, I'm okay with it. As long as they, like I said, as long as they keep moving it around. For instance, as big of a team as St. Louis is, this is the first time they've had an outdoor game where they were the host team. So,
right.
You know, I mean, I'd like to, you know, as long as that's going on, I think they can make this work.
Well, we'll get more into that next week. But speaking of the outdoor game, and I'll bring a little local flavor to it here with Dana Lang joining us on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. The news came out of Vegas this week that, and I think Sinbin Vegas was the first guys to, our friends over at Sinbin Vegas were the first to break the news that the rumored West Point game that may or may not have involved the Las Vegas Golden Knights was off due to the inability of the rink there to handle an NHL game. Dana, Happy New Year to you, sir, and welcome to the show.
Happy New Year to you as well. How are you, sir?
Oh, we're okay. We're okay. I talked to you a little bit about the wife's car getting stolen and all the things that we're going through dealing with getting everything rekeyed and blah, blah, blah. But I think we've got that handled and the cameras are set up and we're actually sitting here hoping to exercise our Second Amendment rights if anybody wants to come back and try us again. So other than that, things have been pretty good. Pretty good. So, yeah, cool. About that. What,
good.
Go ahead.
You know, basically, you know, it's the same thing that you had heard. I didn't really, you know, I mean, that was something that came up that was a possibility. And of course, you know, Foley, you know, obviously would love to have a game there. I kind of wonder, sure, though, what the, you know, what the thought process is now that, you know, they gave him a kind of a hard time with the name. And I'm sure he still has a love affair with it, but, you know, in some ways, it's got to be kind of diluted because in his heart, the name was nothing more than a tribute to where he came from, and I don't think he wanted to use the name for any kind of financial gain. So, obviously, two entities that are on two sides of the coin, but they're not ready to hold an NHL game there, so that's not going to happen for a while.
I was just wondering why wouldn't it be on the Army football field? I'm not even sure that it's on the campus of West Point, to be honest with you. But if it was going to be an outdoor game there, wouldn't they put it on the football field and not on the rink?
Yeah. You would absolutely think so. You know, for sure. I mean, then that way they could, you know, get a lot more fans at the game. But I think that was just kind of something that was thrown out there. I don't know how serious it ever got. You know, I know that the Rangers were the rumored team to be the team that the Golden Knights was going to play, but I'm not even really sure how. And in all honesty as well, this could be just a situation where, you know, Army said no and they came up with some other reason to, you know, to give as to why that the game wouldn't be held. But, you know, I don't think it was anything that was, you know, we're trying to get a preseason schedule together. I'm not even sure that was, I think that was just an off the cuff down the road remark that's something that Foley would like to do.
Well, we're talking with Dana Lane, owner of Dana Lane Sports, and we know he's busy with the NFL football playoffs starting today and his work handicapping and putting out some solid sports information on the Dana Lane Sports. Also, the host at KSHP 1400, Vegas Hockey Hotline, weekdays at 1 with Brian Blessing here in Las Vegas. And also the play-by-play voice of UNLV Skating Rebels Hockey. When are they going to be back in action, sir?
They'll actually be back in action next week. They're going to go up to Colorado for 4 games in 4 days. And good way to get back in. They are a good way to get back on track because, you know, they've had a long layoff. And, you know, now they're going to play the 5th-ranked Northern Colorado team to start off. And then Boise Denver University and Metro University. And they'll be back January 19th against BYU, who's currently ranked 14th in the West. So a big schedule for the 19-3 Rebels. But practice will start again on Tuesday at the Las Vegas Ice Center. And so the second half of the year, or the second quarter, the last quarter of the year, is going to start soon. And, you know, their eye is obviously on the prize of getting the top two, one of those top two ranking positions, so they don't have to compete in a regional. They could just get an automatic bid to Columbus.
Absolutely. Well, the last time they did four games in 4 days, it turned out pretty good. So we'll keep our fingers crossed over here that things can go quite a couple 10-1, 10-3 wins in that stretch of four games in Utah. But maybe things can't go quite that well, but four wins in 4 days, certainly something that the Rebels are familiar with and have done this season. I wanted to throw it over to Chris because we're starting to get a little bit of chatter, if you will, out there about potential coaches that may be in the pipeline for the Golden Knights. And he had a couple questions about that. Chris?
Hey, Dana. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Chris. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Been shoveling today, shoveling snow.
That's what I hear.
So I read a couple of names, and also it just came to me, you know, I've seen on the rumor board for the Golden Knights head coaching guys that were going to be on the, you know, possible interview list. Craig Berube, who did a decent job with the Flyers. You know, Kirk Muller, who's been an assistant. I think he was a head coach for a bit as well. But, you know, now, Dana, that we're in 2017, I mean, one would think, are we not going to see a Golden Knight head coach until after the season ends? Because, you know, obviously if they take somebody who's a top assistant from somebody else, what are you hearing about that whole process? And have you heard those names?
Of course I've heard those names, and it's an interesting dynamic. For what George McPhee says he's looking for, I don't think Kirk Muller is going to be an option. I mean, obviously, the coaching experiences with the Carolina Hurricane and not very impressive. Of course, at the time in the early 2011 through 2013, they weren't that good of a team. So I'm not sure what anybody else could have done with it. But for what he says he's looking for experience, been with multiple teams, that sort of thing, I'm not sure that he's going to be, you know, on the forefront. But Craig Berube has become an interesting topic, at least. Again, not where I would look, but it's kind of interesting because this American Hockey League affiliate thing has popped up now. And the first name that we hear is the Chicago Wolves. And lo and behold, who is the head coach of the Chicago Wolves? And Craig Berube. Doesn't have enough experience for me, but let's also remember that Craig was traded to the Washington Capitals in 93, which was before George McPhee got there. But he was still there in 98 in McPhee's first year, and you'll remember that that was the year that the Capitals went to the Stanley Cup. So there is some sort of a relationship there with McPhee and Berube, and I wouldn't put it out of my mind that Craig wouldn't be a guy that you might look at. He also played for the Islanders, not when McPhee was there, but certainly there might be some sort of a residue resonating from his time there where people can say, we feel this way about him. So there is a McPhee-Berube connection there for sure. I'm just not sure with the traits that McPhee says he's looking for, I'm just not sure that either one of them it falls into those categories.
Yeah, good point you mentioned too with McPhee in terms of connections, and you know everyone writing for the Islander website Eyes on Isles, everyone's talking about the expansion draft and obviously McPhee's with the Islanders the last couple of years, but even though it seems like a while ago, which it really isn't. Oh, George McPhee was the GM of the Capitals, and talking to a good friend who's going to be a guest on the show in a couple of weeks, Alan Zordozinski, and about possibilities with the Capitals, who they could lose. And he mentioned to me about their young cheap backup goalie who's just looking for a chance, who's done well in limited play. And lo and behold, who drafted him but George McPhee? So when it comes time for expansion and such, and also with head coaching, look for those kind of connections. I would have to think that Dana, before I pitch it back to Mark, that Gerard Gallant's gonna at least get an interview, one would think, right?
I would think so, but again, you know, there's no outside of Scott Luce, who's in the organization now. There's not no McPhee Gallant connection. And one thing I know about McPhee, or at least I've been able to tell, is that he's a huge connection guy. He likes to work with people that he's comfortable with, and likes to work with people that other people in the organization are comfortable with. And I would have thought, hey, look, at least Scott got a hold of Gallant and said, hey, sorry to hear what happened. And I'm sure he's on the list. But, you know, I think as the season goes on, here we are again with the rumors about a guy like Claude Julien are starting to pop up a little bit as well, because, you know, Boston, we don't know who they are as a team. And, you know, how many years are you going to go through this in Boston? I mean, I think, you know, we saw Sweeney look for some new blood and kind of turn things over when he got rid of, some key members of the Bruins, and he kept Julien because a lot of his bad luck there was because of injuries. Granted, but you know, hey, look, like with anybody taking over an organization, you want your name stamped on it. And I'm telling you, if a guy like Claude Julien is available and willing, all bets are off for any of these other names.
Well, Claude Julien's going to be coaching the Islanders next year, so you can take that one.
Okay.
If I had my druthers, that's what I would. But I'm with you on Claude Julien. Yeah. I think the Bruins are what they are. They are a team that have a lot of really good forwards, and Tukarask is playing unbelievable, but they're just not strong enough on the blue line. So I think they're doing great, all things considering.
Well, yeah, defensively, I mean, certainly that's, going into the season, we knew that was going to be one of their issues. And we saw here in the World Juniors that, you know, with Charlie McAvoy in the system, and, we have Charlie and Carlo. I think Carlo's going to get better. I mean, I think the future is bright for them. I just don't know, as a former Bruins supporter until the Knights came about, I'm just not sure, this kind of knowing, you know, the way the Boston organization runs, you know, let's understand that if they don't get lucky against the Maple Leafs a few years back and come back in dramatic fashion to take them out in the playoffs, Julien probably is not in Boston right now. And so how many years of there was a complete collapse at the end of the year last season. You know, make no mistake. I mean, this was a team that was in first place with about 5 weeks to go in the season and completely collapsed. I'm not sure as we get down the stretch here, I'm not sure that they're going to be completely happy with that same result again in Boston. But to your point, though, in more to mine, I think there's still some time here, but I do think that if I'm the Golden Knights, when I'm going through all these mock drafts, I somewhat want to have an idea of a coach to fit the pieces that I'm trying to put together on this team.
Agreed.
Yeah, 100%. And to your point, Dan, McPhee has already laid out the brand of hockey that he wants to see this team play. And do you think that the Claude Julien heavy puck possession style of game would fit into the aggressive attacking style that George McPhee has described to us all?
I think Boston has been not as certainly a puck possession team, but I don't think they've been nearly as physical in the year and a half that, you know, they had been in previous years under Julien. I mean, look, they're second in the league in shots on goal per game. I mean, they're certainly pushing the puck up. I think that Julien has completely changed the style of his team over the last year and a half. And all great coaches are going to be able to adapt to the players that they have. And they just don't have, you know, the team to play a heavy brand of hockey anymore. So I've seen this Bruins team be more wide open than I've seen in the, you know, the past 10 years.
And then I agree with that. And Coach Vigneault in New York has is always impressed me with his ability to play that high skill style in Vancouver and then go to New York and not have those horses to race with and change his coaching style to adapt to his personnel and take his team to the Stanley Cup final. That's exactly the trait that you're talking about there. And I think Coach Vigneault is a perfect example of that. And maybe we'll end up finding out if Coach Julian has that kind of adaptability. And I think it's through necessity. Like you said, players like Milan Lucic have been down the road from Boston and they've brought in old friend of the Kings, Colin Miller, who won as a defenseman the hardest shot and fastest skater in the AHL skills competition. So they are kind of going into that hybrid direction. I'd like to see just a coach with a style like Coach Cooper in Tampa Bay get the reins, if there's any of those coaches out there.
Well, I just want to add one more point to that, too. It aside from style, I want somebody here that is a coach that's a beacon of strength, that has done it before, that has said, yes, I'm all in on Las Vegas, because players are going to potentially, you know, look at Las Vegas and say, geez, you know, if Claude Julien thinks we got something there and it's worth going to, then maybe I'm going to take a little bit of a harder look, whether you're a free agent or somebody that, two or three years down the road, you know, you have no idea how long that effect is going to be, is going to have a major impact on this. But if you get a guy like Craig Berube that, you know, is an AHL coach, you know, if I'm a free agent looking to go to Vegas and I still see the tag expansion on this team, I may be less likely to take a chance on that rather than if we have an established coach that's won a cup and been to a cup. I think they're more apt to get better quality players to take a chance on Las Vegas.
I agree, and that's a lot of the same conversation we had about who the general manager should be with. Should they go with the young guy like the John Chiquea in Arizona, up and coming? And thank goodness he went with the veteran general manager that's proven that he can do it. With George McPhee, and I like the way you're thinking about that head coach needs to be an established an established coach in the league and not the up and comer. Now maybe you affiliate with Chicago and get to know Berube a little bit better and groom him for hopefully maybe a future position with our club. But I think you got to go with established coaches there. Well, we've got our next guest, Rob Soroya, on the line. Dana, I'm going to have to let you go, sir. I appreciate you coming in, as always. If you're in Las Vegas, make sure you listen to Dana and Brian at KSHP 1400 every day at 1 o'clock for all the local news about the Golden Knights. And coming up, UNLV Hockey, they have the YouTube link, where if you want to hear Dana do the play-by-play for the UNLV Skating Rebels down the stretch, you can get the schedule and watch the games on YouTube with Dana Lane.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on.
And make sure you follow Dana. Make sure you follow Dana Lane on at Dana Lane Sports on Twitter for his handicapping expertise and also for all the hockey news out of Las Vegas at Dana Lane NHL also on Twitter. Thank you, sir. And you have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure. Best of luck to both of you this week.
All right. You too. And now we're going to bring in Rob Soroya, joining us from Canada, talk about some Edmonton Oilers hockey. Rob, good day to you, sir.
Hello, Mark. Chris, how you guys doing?
We're good. It's good to talk to you again, buddy.
Yeah, same here. How was your guys' New Year's and holiday season? All good?
Yeah. I went through a little bit of tribulation where they stole my wife's car right out of the driveway and got the keys to it. We got the car back, but they got the keys. So I'm currently posting up with eyes out the window waiting for my opportunity to get those keys back if he decides he's stupid enough to come back by my house. But other than that, we had a great holiday. I think Chris is up there shoveling snow today. How is it where you are?
Good. Typical January in Edmonton. You know, it's a little frigid. I don't really have much in the way of snow to deal with, so Chris has me on that. But, yeah, everything's good. Fantastic, and everyone's still pretty pumped about how their beloved Oilers are doing these days.
Now, is that – I want to get right into it. Is that – are we living up to expectations or exceeding expectations this deep into the season?
Oh, in my mind, exceeding. I don't even think it's you know, they have flaws still in their game. But as far as where they, you know, currently sit in the standings, they're 3 points out of first in the Pacific, right? Like, they're right there. It's exceeding.
Yeah, for sure.
I looked at them coming into the season as nothing more than a bubble playoff team. And who knows, maybe they slip. But it all depends on L.A. If they get quick back and there's a turnaround there. If not, I don't see why they don't finish somewhere in the top three in the Pacific.
With respect to quick, I don't I think there's more problems in L.A. That's, you know, I'm a Kings fan. But with Budaj sporting, yep. What has he got? He's got 17 wins. He's got a 2.00 goals against and a 929 save percentage. That's not – Quick's not going to come in and improve on that after being out of action for, you know, darn near a year and coming off an injury. I think Peter Budaj's done everything he could do. And I don't see that Quick returning is the panacea for the Los Angeles Kings right now. They need to figure out how to put the puck in the net. With Jeff Carter and 21 goals and no other member of the Los Angeles Kings in double digits in goals scored, that is going to be the issue that takes down the Kings this year, not the goaltending. I thought Peter Budaj has come in and done exactly what he needed to do and taken advantage of his opportunity. And who knows, he might be a Golden Knight next year as well as he's played this year. But anyway, back to the Oilers. That I don't think you guys have trouble from Los Angeles in your rearview mirror as much so maybe as you, the dog days of January that came up and bit Arizona last year, who was in third place this late into the season with their young guns. How is this team built to sustain? I mean, aside from Connor McDavid leading the league in points and probably going to continue to do that all the way through the season, is how is this team built to sustain that through the next 40 games and secure a playoff spot?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. That's a million-dollar question. We'll see if they are.
Right.
Right, because right now a lot of it is, especially lately, like Draisaitl's arguably carried this team even more so than McDavid over the last month. Especially the last 2-3 weeks, he's been arguably their best player. And Talbot's still playing at a pretty high level and plays a lot. Their defense, while still flawed, it's no question, you know, way better than what they had. So if McDavid kind of starts to kick it into gear again, and, you know, guys like Eberle, especially Eberle, starts finding the back of the net, he's got like one goal in his last 18 or 19 games it is at the moment, so, which is insane considering the most of those games he's been playing next to McDavid. So if they get that secondary scoring, they should be able to maintain with their goaltender playing at the level he is. If there's a slip in goal, they're gonna have some troubles. Their schedule is compact in certain areas, but they also get a couple of weeks at a time, both in late February and I think early March, where they actually have, you know, successive like two games in 10 days sort of thing. So those are games where days where Talbot can rest. So, you know, if he plays a lot, they should be good to go.
Well, you mentioned Talbot, and I wanted to get to that. He's third in the league in wins with 19, but his goals against is right around 2.5 per game at 2.48. Is that a number that the Oilers can live with, being the pace that they score at, or is that something to be worried about as they go forward?
Well, in the grand scheme of things, I think that puts the Oilers in, you know, the upper half of the league-ish, right? And typically they're in the bottom third of the league when it comes to goals against. So it's fine, right? It's a 3-2 league. So if they give
Coach
two and a half goals a game. Yeah, well, it's what it is. He's 100% right.
It's a 3-2 league. Yep.
If it's a 3-2 league, and if he's letting in 2.5 goals a game, you got a chance to win every night, and that's what he's doing. He helped steal a game in Boston that they really got thoroughly outplayed in the first two periods. They played well in the third. He had nothing to do in the third, but, you know, if you go back a few games, the game against Vancouver last Saturday, Oilers didn't play very well. They got a goal late. He kept them in the game. They're getting, that's the other thing. They're getting a lot of points, loser points, you know, which in today's NHL are a must for most playoff teams. If you're going to the shootout or overtime and you drop a game here and there, at least you're getting points. And that's helping the Oilers stick right where they are with San Jose and Anaheim, even though Calgary's starting to come as well.
Surprisingly enough, Vancouver is actually just past the Kings and is only a point back. And there are seven teams within 4 points right now in the Western Conference for that last wild card spot. So it's going to be a shootout down the stretch. And the best hope for Edmonton is to maintain that third spot. And they've opened up a 3-point lead now behind them for that spot in the Pacific. And I think their best chance is to just to get that third spot, because there's going to be a lot of ground. If they did go into a little bit of an offensive slump where they drop, you know, 4 out of 6 or something, there's too many teams bunched up that have been there before and have gone through that stretch, like Dallas, Los Angeles, even most of the squad there in Vancouver that have gone through those grinded out games down the stretch and know how to get it done. Edmonton's best hope, I think, is to just secure that third spot. And right now, I don't see any reason they can't. Let me bring Chris in. Chris, I know you got a couple questions for Rob. Why don't you fire away, buddy?
Hey, Rob, good to talk to you again. I got three questions for you here. Let's start with Mr. Lucic. How would you assess his performance both on the ice and in terms of mentoring the young guys?
Lucic is a funny one in this neck of the woods. Part of the reason is, you know, the contract and length of his contract plays a part of things. And Lucic has always been a great 5-on-5 guy throughout his career. This year, it's been the complete opposite. He's done next to nothing 5-on-5, and he scored quite a bit on the power play. So production-wise, if you look at it, he's not way off his career norms. It's just he's getting there in a different manner, shall we say. Up until recently, Todd McClellan kept force-feeding him to McDavid, even though it's become abundantly clear, going back to last year and through stretches of this year, that Maroon is a better fit on the left side with McDavid. So I think because of that, some people have looked at it as a 50-50 proposition, shall we say. Part of the issue, too, though, I think people in this neck of the woods were expecting Lucic to come in and be this, you know, this dominant physical force that was going to kick the living crap out of anyone if they looked at McDavid the wrong way. And it's the game's not played that way anymore. And he honestly hasn't been that player since the first probably 3-4 years of his career in Boston. He's still an intimidating figure. Apparently he's been a great fit in the room. And to go back to what Mark was saying earlier, he's one of those guys who's come in and knows how to win, which they didn't have. So he has helped in that sense for sure. Right. And I think that's played a big part. You know, he may not have delivered so much the performance that people have expected, but in my opinion, it's hard to say it's a failing grade on what he's done. It's just, it's about what I expected, but probably less than what some people expected.
Now, you mentioned Cam Talbot, Rob, and, you know, from afar, I believe he's started every game for the Oilers but 4. And
that is correct.
Wow.
I would be concerned in terms of once you hit that, you know, hit March 1st or so, and I know you said there's a couple of breaks in the schedule. Obviously, they have that player break this year, which I don't think Edmonton's hit yet as well. But how concerned are you that, you know, those last 30, 40 days when the push is on, that Cam Talbot's gonna, the tank is going to be near empty based on how much he's used?
Well, I'm in the minority. I think he can do it. In this neck of the woods, there's a lot of people that are fall into that category that you're referring to. A lot of people who think that tank's going to be empty. If you watch Talbot play, and again, I watch more of him now, obviously, than I would have with the Rangers, but he's got a very quiet style and game to the way he plays. So because of it, there's limited movement. And over the last, well, year plus since he's been here, he's always seemed to play better when he plays a lot. You know, and there's a lot of goalies, this misconception that goaltenders have to play 60 games or they're going to be worn out. Well, not necessarily, right? He's played a lot early. But again, if you look at the Oilers' schedule early on, October was a walk because it was so easy. They didn't leave Canada until the first week in November. it was such an easy schedule. November was tough, and you saw him kind of falter a little bit with the rest of the team. But even this current road trip, like they play tonight in New Jersey, he'll play. Gustafson will probably play tomorrow in Ottawa. Then the Oilers have a six-game homestand where they play every other day, and then they go to Calgary on the next, basically back-to-back at the end, but then they play 3 in 11 days. So if you limited practice time, you know, and they have, I don't see why he can't play. There's no signs of him slowing down. Now, could it be at the end of the season? Yeah, I guess, but, you know, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, you have to upgrade in Gustafson, and I don't think Gustafson's that great of a goalie. I never have. But the Oilers have other issues that I think need addressing first. If they can upgrade a backup, great, you know, but I have no issue with Talbot playing, well, if he plays 65 to 70 games, so be it, you know. Grant Fuhr played 75 here. So yeah. I don't see why Cam Talbot can't play 65 to 70.
Well, when Grant Fuhr was there, in all fairness, most of the play was on the other end of the ice, sir.
But to be fair, too, that's not completely true. back in when he did it in 1988, it wasn't the case. Remember, he was nominated for MVP that year with Gretzky and Lemieux. So that's a fallacy I think some people sometimes have with the Oilers. At times it's true, but especially during the latter part of that era, they turned it up to a different notch in the playoffs. But during the season, there was still a lot to do, and the travel out here is what it is, and it's always been terrible, and it still is.
For sure.
So, Rob, in terms of before the trade deadline, I guess the obvious question would be, you know, Edmonton's going to be looking to improve that blue line, maybe get in a veteran player and kind of earn exercise that goes with this playoff drought. How active do you think they will be? And, you know, you think they'll be very active to get a guy like a Johnny Oduya or a veteran like that to help out this blue line for down the stretch? And how much of a willing buyer would they be? Will they, for instance, I'm just speaking out loud, will they trade, let's say, like 2 second-round draft picks? Or you know better than me, but I don't think their pipeline is the greatest. So probably thinking more draft picks.
Yeah, the issue with the Oilers this year, they're kind of going into the deadline. They're in that spot where do you really want to give up something legitimate for a potential playoff run when I don't really think they're capable of a potential playoff run? You know, could they get into the playoffs and maybe cause havoc for a round or two? For sure. But the issue with the back end is there's rumor around here and has been for a few weeks dating back to what the GM and Mr. Chiarelli was saying about Russell. Like, they're actually considering signing Chris Russell, which I honestly can't see, especially not until after the expansion draft. But if you're bringing in another blue liner, it's going to cost them. And the issue they also have is they don't have a third line center because Draisaitl's been playing on the wing lately and now on McDavid's line and previous to that with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And they're short on right wing because Eberle isn't scoring. So, yeah, they need an upgrade on the back. You're 100% correct, Chris. But they also have other holes in that lineup. So will they look at upgrading? Probably. My guess is if they can do it with a third-round pick or so. I'm pretty sure, actually, they don't have a second-rounder this year because I think this is the one that goes to Boston for them signing Chiarelli. But they do have two-thirds because they have one from the Yakupov deal. So could they do something like that? Possibly. But, I think there'll be – I honestly expect the Oilers to make moves prior to the expansion draft once the season's over. So they can kind of juggle their what they end up protecting or not. But, yeah, come playoff time, it's really hit and miss, man. It really is.
Mark, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay, well, you mentioned the expansion draft, so let's talk a little bit about that. If you had to pencil in who they would be protecting and who they might be losing, what would your expansion roster look like for Edmonton?
With the Oilers, the big question is whether they go the 4-4 or 7-3, right? And as of the moment, as to who's here, they essentially have 5 forwards up front that they'd want to protect in Maroon, Eberle, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Lucic. And then on the back end, they have three confirmed that you think in Klefbom, Larson, and Sekera. The one body that he hasn't had a great year because of injury this year that they really don't want to leave unattended back there is Brandon Davidson, because I think someone would grab him. I think Vegas would grab him instantly. But then if you go 4-4-1, you're looking at what forward do you leave unprotected, right? Which means, do they move a big ticket prior to, like, an Eberle? Because at some point they're going to need that money with Lucic's money on board. You're going to need money to long-term Dreisaitl and McDavid pretty quickly. Because if you leave Maroon unprotected, you think Vegas is in on that as well, unless the Oilers make a side deal with him, which I know have been rumored with some people, where it's like, here, we'll give you something legitimate if you leave so-and-so, you know, free if we leave him unprotected. So those yep. would be the biggest ones, I'd say. And the other option, depending on what's there, is if they go the goaltending route. The Oilers, Brossoit hasn't had a great year or a great month and a half in the farm. But, you know, as a potential goaltender where they got to pick three, it's an option. Problem with him is he's got to go through waivers to clear. So if Vegas were to take him, it would have to be as a backup, right? I'm not one who I think where Vegas is going to – I know everyone's going on about how they might blow whatever, a bunch of money on a goaltender. I don't know why they would, you know. If you get – I'd rather go to Dallas and get one of those guys. They only have a year left than a guy like Fleury who has multiple years left. So, but we'll see, right? It's tough to say because there's so many options that'll be out there, and I think we're going to see a ton of movement prior to by pretty much every team in the league.
Yeah, my goalie of my fantasy goalie here has been Bishop, contract expiring yeah. at the end of the year. Vasilevsky struggling as the man since Bishop got hurt. So when they come back, they're gonna you got to decide: are we going to make the playoffs? If so, they're going to have to hang on to both goalies all the way through, and then we have a. Exclusive window to negotiate with any free agent that I think it's a couple weeks before. It's actually 2 days before the expansion draft. We have a window to actually sign free agents that no one else in the league has until July 1st. So if they're going to blow a bunch of money on a goalie, a Vezina finalist who's in the prime of his career would be someone I would like to blow money on, not a 39-year-old goalie who granted has two Stanley Cups, but one of them was from the bench, and he also has given up 8-10 goals in playoff games at the same time. So I don't want to go to Pittsburgh for, you know what I'm saying? That goalie question, I think, comes down to maybe Ben Bishop. I know Montoya just got signed, so that could be a good backup. And, I mean, we could go down that list, but I don't think the goalie answer is coming out of Edmonton.
No, and the other thing, too, I think with sometimes when it comes to this Vegas thing, so many people are looking at, oh, what players are they going to take? Well, you got to remember, this is Vegas's one chance. If they can get young players from organizations, that's what they should be focusing on. Not
absolutely
to get, you know, established talent. Like, why? Like you said, you can go do that via free agency. They're not going to be probably very good for a couple of years anyway, but if they can
yep.
build something in the farm by the expansion draft, by taking, you know, a guy from almost every team that looks like, hey, it's a younger player that maybe has an upside. Well, why wouldn't you do that? Just, it makes so much more sense. And then, like you said, you can focus on free agents that are out there. And then if you got to make the odd deal here and there, you do it.
Yeah, for sure. I was talking with the cap from St. Louis and mentioned Ty Ratty, who isn't going to find a home in St. Louis, but he is a skilled player, taken 17th overall, first-round pick, who just hasn't found his way in a Hitchcock system. Now with McPhee saying he wants to play that upscale, fast-tempo attacking type of game, I think your value is going to be in getting those former first round picks that haven't become into their own yet in their 21-22 looking for a fresh start. They didn't forget their hands. They didn't forget their feet. A lot of times it's just a question of organizational fit. And like you said, if you could fill the cupboard up with, you know, 10 to 12 of those type players that will be able to grow into your franchise and just ice, you know, maybe not the cream of the crop in the first few years. It's like you said, you get one chance. You want to create that organizational depth right away because, you know, as you've seen, the draft isn't always, you know, cut and dry for a lot of teams. It's really tough to build a skilled pipeline like Arizona has that you know, it's tough to do. So I don't think that you need to make that splash like you're talking about.
No, no, for sure. And like Ratty's a good example. And with him, well, him going on waivers this week in Carolina, grabbing him. But even from St. Louis, another perfect example, an ex-Oiler in Yakupov. If I'm Vegas and there's no one on St. Louis that does anything for me, I'd take Yakupov in 2 seconds. He'd probably excel in that sort of situation, right? They're not going to be, the pressure is going to be minimal. He'll be entertaining to the fan base out there, and he'll probably score, you know? Like, and again, it's a perfect short-term band-aid solution that might help bring people to the building, get them excited about a brand of hockey they're playing, while you said allowing them still the ability to bring in other pieces elsewhere. So it'll be interesting. And from an Oilers standpoint, honestly, if I'm Vegas and Davidson's available, that's who I take. Griffin Reinhart's obviously going to be made available too, who I didn't mention earlier. And possibly you go that route, another young defenseman. I'm assuming they'll take a lot of young defensemen. But the problem with Reinhart, and I'm sure Chris can attest to it as well with during his days with the Islanders, they're still not 100% sold on him being able to make it into the NHL as a regular. You know, that he's a big boy. He played really well here with the Oil Kings, but he has yet to take that next step. And him being such a big guy, he just doesn't play with that aggression, which would make him a far better all-around defenseman at the pro level, but we just haven't seen it yet, right? So he thinks the game well, not a great passer, not a great skater, but should still be good enough to be like a bottom-pairing defenseman in the NHL, you would think, especially on an expansion team, right?
Right. I think either one of those two, and we'll talk about it later on in the season, but I think either one of those two would be a fine way to go. I think Davidson probably more so than Reinhart for the reasons you mentioned, but Reinhart's still young enough to grow into that mentality that'll fit his body type a little bit, I think, right?
Yeah, hopefully that is the hope, right? And that was the bet from the Oilers standpoint, right, when they ended up giving up the two picks, and it's not looking like that great of a deal at the moment. But then on the flip side to them, if they would have actually recognized what Davidson was, because he was already in the system, maybe you don't make that deal, right? So, but hey, and the other thing with the Oilers this year is Matthew Benning, who they signed as a, you know, unrestricted free agent out of college. He's been fantastic. He's arguably been one of the best four defensemen. So that's another positive for them moving forward. The problem is they don't have those horses on the back, right?
Right, right. Well, we're going to be up against it here in a minute. Chris, do you have anything else for Rob today?
Yeah, that's it, Rob. Thanks for coming on, and we'd love to have you back on, especially if you know, the Oilers can make the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure, guys. And I, like I said, barring a collapse, I just, with McDavid, the kid, like I said, even though he's going through a bit of a tough stretch, which for him, a tough stretch is like, you know, 9 points in 10, 15 games or something. once he kicks it into gear again, you know, he alone will be able to win the odd game by himself. So they should be able to sneak in. And I'll tell you this, there's no this city has been waiting well over a decade for it. So it'll be a madhouse out here for sure.
New stadium, new outlook. I love it. How is the new arena down there, by the way? I wanted to ask you that real quick. I'm sure you've been there, right?
Yeah. It's very it's a new arena when you walk in. Because, you know, Northland/Rexall, that's been here forever. You walk in and that's the first thing you're hit with, right? You're just like, whoa, like, you know, it's just like night and day. As far as whatever's in there, it's an arena is an arena after a while, right? But the way it's built, it's very nice. It's the atmosphere, game atmosphere inside is fantastic. The upper level, from what I've heard from a lot of people, and I saw it myself as well, where it's steeper than normal, than what people here are, you know, accustomed to. But the in-house experience is watching the game is fantastic. Like, it's night and day. Like, it really is. Like, when you're in Rexall, up in the stands, there's no bad seats and stuff, but the even the ice surface, right, after the national anthems, it's like there's almost
right.
this hue over the ice, right?
Yeah,
but in
sure.
Now in the new building, that scoreboard is so massive, when it turns, right after the bottom of it turns on, man, the whole stadium, the whole ice surface is lit up. Like, it looks like you're playing on a sheet of snow. It's so white. So it's a beautiful building. The atmosphere from a fan standpoint still isn't there, but I think once the playoffs hit, it'll change because so many Oilers fans are on edge right now. They, you know, even though they're winning, they expect them to go on a 10-game losing streak. It's just it's embedded in them from years of having to deal with it.
For sure. Well, it's funny you say that about the Upper Bowl because that's when we had the Frozen Fury here in Las Vegas with the Kings Dallas and Kings Avalanche there at the start of the season. That was what the consensus of everybody that came here was that, my God, the Upper Bowl is so steep. It's right on top of the playing surface, and you're really a lot closer. And I think that's kind of, you know, by design, of course, to match some of the older stadiums, Chicago Stadium and the Forum and Maple Leaf Gardens, especially Boston Gardens to a lesser extent. But the way the Upper Bowl is brought out over the lower bowl and closer to the ice surface, acoustically that creates a very loud environment, and it also gives the fans a chance to be right on top of the action. And I always miss those old barns where they're right on top of the ice, and you know, some of the best memories are early for me anyway, where it's like the old Montreal Forum, everybody's right on top of everybody, and they're singing the national anthem and you can't even hear the singer because the crowd's so loud doing that. And a lot of that's to the acoustics of the way those old barns are built. And it's really cool to hear that the arena there in Edmonton is kind of built along those same lines, because, as you know, you got to dirty up your building a little bit. Like you said, it's still new, it's still pristine. Get it dirty, get a couple playoff runs through there, and I think it'll pay off in the long run.
Yeah, no, for sure. And honestly, I think the biggest thing with it here is so many season ticket holders have had tickets for forever, right? So a lot of the people that are sitting up there are older people. So that steepness is something they're like, oh, it's hard to get to my seat, and whatever the case may be.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% wholeheartedly. Like, from an atmosphere standpoint and from a viewing standpoint, from a paying customer, it's quite good. And like I said, I think it'll be a totally different thing come playoff time.
All righty. Well, we got to let you go, sir. Appreciate you coming in, and we will definitely talk to you down the road once we start doing playoff previews and the Oilers name comes up.
You bet. You guys take care. Thanks again for having me.
All right. Thanks, make sure you guys follow Rob on Twitter @oil_drop for all of his Hockey Writers content, and we'll talk to you down the road, sir.
Okay. Cheers, guys. Take care.
All right, Chris. Well, what do you say?
Yeah, no, it was a good. I think I kind of agree with Rob. I think they're in a good position, but things, as you said, are a bit tight out there. I think the Sharks and Ducks are going to start to pull away, and I think it's going to be Vancouver, to me, is one of the most biggest overachieving teams. I think push comes to shove, it's going to be a race between the Kings, the Flames, and the Oilers for that last automatic spot, and then obviously a team like the Oilers or the Flames or the Kings or the Canucks, to be fair, are not just going to have that spot to go for, but obviously, as you mentioned, one of the wild cards out west. So, you know, a thought came to me when we were talking about, when you were asking Rob about expansion and, you know, in terms of these potential side deals. You know, one thing, and I'm not saying that George McPhee in Las Vegas is going to do this in every instance, but, you know, take a team like the Islanders, who kind of have a tough situation because of Ryan Pulock, one of their top young defense prospects, having to be protected. You know, they can make out a deal with the Islanders and say, look, we're going to have our exposed list. There's going to be other really good players on it. We want to go to the 7-3-1 format, so we're going to leave Pulock exposed. Just take someone other than Pulock, and there'll be someone like Calvin DeHaan as an example on that list, and we'll give you a second-round pick. And that would be another way to build up the organization for McPhee, of adding a bunch of second, third, fourth round picks when he didn't even give up anything for him, other than picking somebody else who he likes as well.
Well, sure. Remember when we were talking with him on the show, he said he'd call Garth up, and Garth told him, hey, now take it easy on me, buddy. He's like, nope, it's business now. If he wants to hold somebody back, it'd be a first or a couple first, or we're taking the player we want. And, you know, it's been done in the past. It's been done in the past, and I don't think there's any rules against it. So here's your list. If that's who you're going to leave on it, I think Mr. McPhee is going to take who he wants to take, unless someone says, well, how much is that player worth to you?
Right.
There's, excuse me, there's a lot of young talent in the league right now, and you can't protect them all, my friend.
No, I agree. So, so next week we're going to have the great Julian Fisher, which was one of our, both of our favorite shows last year. She is a anthropologist. You know, Jillian lives in Boston, but she's a diehard Philly Flyer fan, so we can get her unique perspective on those two teams, as well as she was at the Winter Classic in St. Louis, and within the last week or so, she did a trip to Nashville, I think on that same trip, so we can kind of get a feel for those, the Winter Classic, hockey in Nashville, as well as... the Flyers and the Bruins, and well, you know, we have, and later this, we have a couple more great shows coming up, and we have locked in. People can pencil in or write in ink their calendars there. Sunday, February 12th. That's the week after the Super Bowl, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Our trade deadline show, and you might say, wait a minute, isn't the trade deadline at the end of the month? And it is. We're gonna have a panel of guys on. We're gonna have Matt Pryor, Zach Devine, and J.D. Styles. You know, breaking down who are the buyers, who are the sellers, who's gonna be moved, what big players could be moved, should be moved, all those good things. That's gonna be an hour format of you know, us just peppering the panel, if you will. So so we have a firm date on that. So looking for, and next week with Julian Fisher, we're gonna start a half hour earlier than this week, so it'll be 11:30 a.m. Pacific time and 2:30 p.m. Eastern time next Saturday, the 14th, and hopefully it won't be snowing.
I don't think I'll have to worry about that, but
So Chris is
finally settled in over at the fan-sided page, Eyes on Isles. They're doing a really good job with him over there. Feels like he's got a real comfortable home, willing to give him a lot of creative control over what he does. And we just want to give a shout out to the guys at fan-sided and the Eyes on Isles page. For all of Chris's Islanders content, that's where you do all your Islanders content is through Eyes on Isles, obviously. So if you guys want to find any of Chris's Islanders content, he's really on the pulse of the team, and follow Chris at the NL King on Twitter, back from his fantasy baseball days. But he filters all his articles through his Twitter handle, or just go to the fan-sided page, Eyes on Isles, and look him up along with the other guys there. They all do a great job covering the Isles. So we just want to give a shout out to Eyes on Isles, and also to the guys over at thehockeywriters.com for carrying our podcast. We're on a page with a bunch of different hockey podcasts, and they're all great shows. They're all great guys. So make sure you go over, check out thehockeywriters.com as well as Eyes on Isles. And you can always find our show on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and we archive all the shows that we do live here on blogtalkradio.com. And our keyword is always Vegas Hockey Podcast, all one word. So if you throw that in your search engine or your podcast catcher, you'll be able to find all our shows relatively easy, or go to VegasHockeyPodcast.com, and we link all our stuff to that as well. So, Chris, unless you got anything else, vive la USA.
One last shout out is actually my latest Islanders article is how the upcoming expansion draft could lead to a trade or two for the Islanders based on what I just talked about. So, you know, and again, once again, congratulations, you said, to Team US, Team Long Island. I mean, Team USA for bringing home the World Championships, I think the first time since 2010, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, I think John Carlson scored the game winner in that one, for the one from the Washington Caps. So looking forward to the next set of shows, as always.
2013.
Okay. 10, 13,
and 17.
Okay, not bad. Well, I'm looking forward to the neat what we have ahead. We've got a lot of great shows coming up, and you know, and as the weeks go by, we're going to be talking more Vegas Golden Knights as well, because my friend, it's getting closer and closer to becoming a reality in terms of who's going to be on the team.
Oh man, I hear you. We always said it was going to go fast, and now that it's in 2017, we're in the calendar year where Vegas will ice a team. So every little bit of news is exciting, and I tell you, the community is on fire. You're starting to see all the merch popping up in all the stores. I got my sweater, my hat, and you're bumping into people while you're wearing your hat. They're wearing their hat, and you just kind of tip the hat and give them a nod. It's the excitement is building, sir. It's
hey,
it's going to be interesting to see Jillian.
Yes, and we're only about 100 days away from the draft lottery, and that will be a huge night for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, well, the way they're going to do it is he's going to have us out at T-Mobile Arena with the ice surface down, and he's going to have the full, every time they announce a player, if that guy can get into town, he's going to skate him out in the jersey. That's also, as of now, that's going to be like when they unveil the jerseys, is when they present the team. It's going to be if they can make it to Vegas, they're going to be introduced in person on the ice in uniform.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to, yeah, it's, as of right now, those are the plans. So that's going to be really exciting too. Give the kids a lot of fun to get down on the glass.
Oh, definitely. I was talking about the NHL draft lottery, though, where, you know, Vegas obviously has a chance to, you know, wind up with the number one pick. That will be, you know, what, mid, late April?
As long as we don't go worse than third, I feel, you know, when our old friend Tom Cudahy, Buffalo Sabres fan, had the worst record in the league 2 years in a row and did not get the first pick either year. But Jack Eichel's not Connor McDavid either, sir.
Yeah,
we just spent a half hour, 45 minutes talking about Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers, and they're in a playoffs. Buffalo is going to be picking first again, but as long as we don't pick worse than our pong ball slot, which is number three. If we could take the third overall, I'll be happy with that. If somehow we end up down at sixth, I'm going to be very disappointed. And I'll certainly be pleasantly surprised if we get the number one.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference between pick. Well, again, we'll have people on it to talk about it, especially with fans in Vegas eagerly wanting to hear about it. We'll have Zach Devine back specifically to talk about the draft. Reach out to Russ Cohen about it. But what the sense I get is the guys taken between three and six, it's going to be pretty close. I mean, on one draft board, they could have their player at six, could be another team's draft board. That player's there for them at three. So, you know, obviously I think there will be a little bit of difference between picking one or two, but not so much picking three through six, but still a lot of time before that.
Yep. I don't know. I guess that if it's that bunched up, I guess you'll get a really good look at McPhee's philosophy as far as centermen, forwards, or defensemen on how he wants to go about building this team and what he values as a franchise position. So it'll be interesting to see. Even so, if he does get that third pick and that talent group right there at the end of the year is bunched up, and you have a defenseman, a forward, and a couple centermen, which way he goes. So it'll be interesting to get a read on that.
Absolutely.
Well, all right, buddy. Good show this week. Appreciate it. Make sure you guys, one more thing, follow us on Twitter at Vegas Hockey Pod as well. All of our content goes through there. So until next week with Jillian Fesher, for Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone. We'll be right back.